Whenever we have someone into our council, Dallas, we didn't want him just come in as a speaker and kind of eat and run or speak and run, but rather to interact with you. And so I hope you'll take advantage of him being here. We've tried to involve him considerably in NAV Press and some of the things that we're doing together. We've had Dallas with us at our NAV World Conference and just really want to have him be a part of us because we think as navigators, we need to have input from those in the broader body of Christ. And so, Dallas, I think the first thing that I'd just like to ask you, just tell us a little bit about your home background, just where you grew up and your parents, your family, and so forth.
I was born in Buffalo, Missouri, quite a while ago, 1935. And my mother died when I was two, and I have two older brothers and one older sister. Only one brother is left in this world. And as I look back on it, I really recognize how profoundly devoted to Christ the people around me were. They often, I think, were not very well informed about a lot of things, but their hearts were really in the right place. And so I grew up in the First Baptist Church of Buffalo, Missouri. And I was converted there when I was nine. My pastor was a man who wept as he preached. And not like Jimmy Swaggart weeps, but quietly. Yes. You know. And that very much impressed me. And so we were in church when the doors were open, and I had decided that I would go forward one Sunday night, but my pastor wasn't there, and I didn't want to go forward if he wasn't there, and I spent the most miserable week in my life, and so next Sunday I could hardly wait until they sang the invitation hymn and went forward. It stuck.
It stuck. Good. In Isaiah 51:1, there's an interesting passage. It says, "Remember the rock from which you were cut, and the hewn and the quarry from which you were cut." I may have got the two words spread around, but all of us have a history. And especially those of us who get up in years, we start looking back and saying, what made me like I am? And, you know, Dallas is a professor of philosophy. God has given him many things. But how would you answer that? What made you the person that you are? Part is your home, your pastor, but what other things do you think about?
Well, I think probably two things more than anything else. And one was the prayers of my grandmothers. And which I didn't know at the time, but I came to understand later. And I love to read. I've always loved to read. I got started early and just read and read. I remember reading all of Zane Grey's novels at one time. I think I must have been in the fourth or fifth grade. And then I just continued to read and read and read and read. I had no idea of difference of fields. If it was a book, I'd read it.
Yeah. I heard, is this true that you read every book in your town library? Or your
well,
library?
Our high school library, of course, it wasn't very large. But, no, I wound up reading some things. I think I read The Count of Monte Cristo three times in that period. And I just read just everything that was there. And that's been something that has gone with my, somehow I don't understand, with my devotion to Christ has always been tied to that. And I don't understand how it worked. But it meant that as I grew, I just read anything that had the slightest smell of Christian on it. And so that broadened me out a lot. And I think that is one of the things that eventually led into what I do. I must tell you, I didn't choose to be a philosophy professor. I'm an ordained Southern Baptist minister, and that is what I intended to do. And at one point, I felt that I was so ignorant about God and the soul that I should really have mercy on people and go back to school.
Go back.
And by that time, I had graduated from Baylor University, and I knew that philosophers spent more time talking about God and the soul than any other group. And I had a bachelor's degree in psychology, and I knew I wasn't going to get much out of that. And if I went to seminary, I figured I'd learn a lot of languages and stuff, but I wouldn't get to deal with that. And so I decided to go to graduate school, University of Wisconsin.
And now tell us what your job is right now and what you've been doing for the last 25 years.
Since 1965, I've been a professor at the University of Southern California, and a few visiting assignments, one up here at Boulder and UCLA and a few other places, but mainly at USC. And I've just gone through the whole process there of professors and so on. And what I am is just a philosophy professor. And, you know, for the sake of time, anyone who wants to know more about it, just my daughter maintains a web page. And you can just check it out and see what I do. I write a lot more in philosophy than I do in religion, but no one reads that.
What do you write about?
Mainly about knowledge. I'm currently writing a book on the disappearance of moral knowledge. But the real problem in the modern world, and especially in the Western world, and its departure from a basis in the scriptures and Christ, is what they make out of knowledge. And the idea that the Bible is a source of knowledge is now, to put it mildly, not highly regarded. But then what do you put in its place? And there's just almost nothing in the way of an alternative, and that's what accounts for so much of what we see now.
Well, it's interesting that you've chosen the field of philosophy. I remember you shared with us in Nav World why you decided to become a professor instead of a pastor.
Well, I hesitate to say decided. I was, because really, Jerry, I didn't know what I was doing. When I finished my degree at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, they asked me to stay on on the faculty for a year there, temporary appointment. During that year, I pastored a couple of little congregational churches out in the countryside, as well as taught at the university. And in that year, the Lord said to me, and I use those words advisedly, He said to me, "Now, if you go into the universities, the churches will generally be open to you. But if you stay in the church, the university will be closed to you." And at the time, I had no sense of the significance of that. And I sure don't hold myself up as any model of anyone in these regards. It's just that the Lord said that to me. And even at that time, even in Madison, the church was still the cultural authority. Even in Madison, which is way out there. But I had no idea how it was going to change.
You know, it's quite clear to those of us who read what you've done, and you know now that God has given you a good mind, a good intellect. When did you figure that out, that you had that?
Well, you know, I never really did. I'm not sure that's true now. Sincerely, I guess I began to get an inkling when I took exams. There's an exam called Miller Analogy. And I don't know if any of you know what that is, but it's supposedly a test for intelligence, and I did well on that. And then I did very well on what is called the graduate record exam. And I think it was at that point that I said, well, you know, maybe. But My confidence grows not so much because of things like that, but just seeing what I have been able to do. And I don't think it's because I'm particularly smart. I think God blesses me. But I function in the profession of philosophy in a respectable way, and serve in the various professional committees and do all that stuff. I guess how I would describe it, Jerry, is just assurance that God with me, I can do what needs to be done.
Good.
And I've been wonderfully well treated. You often hear stories about how Christians suffer in the university system, and I think younger people, often partly because of not understanding what to do, do suffer. But I must say, I have never suffered, except personal jibes, which everyone gets. You get those if you're a Christian truck driver.
How do your colleagues treat you, knowing your deep commitment to Christ and to the Scriptures particularly?
Well, they differ. Some of them are glad. I have one man in particular who is on the philosophy faculty. Now, the faculty generally, there are quite a number of real Christians. And, of course, they're all very happy. And I speak a lot on the campus, and everyone knows what I do and what I believe. Then I have others that are, if you said, now, we're going to shoot all the Christians, they'd show up. But you know, they don't know what to do if they're not going to shoot them. And so how are you going to be a Christian? They don't know. And so they're glad, and they'll read my books and talk to me a little bit about them.
Okay.
Especially if there's some clever intellectual point that they pick up on. But they just don't know what, they don't know how to do it on their own. Then there are others that just, they don't understand. They can't comprehend it. But I want to say they're just so gracious to me. So again, I think God often has protected me because he knew I didn't have enough guts to stand it if he didn't. So I have been remarkably protected and blessed, I think.
Right. I think, just as a side note, that God gives wisdom how to live in the secular world.
Yes, he does.
And that many times we need to learn how to walk wisely in the midst of that. But I think there's one other thing, Dallas, is just to earn one's way.
Yeah, that's right. People often say to me, you know, how did you get tenure? Well, I didn't try to get tenure. I tried to do a good job.
Yeah. Key.
I didn't try to get tenure. I've never asked for promotion. I've never tried to be promoted. I never asked for money. I never asked for anything.
Yeah. Those of you who are reading the back page, the little articles I'm doing on the staff letter, this is what I'm talking about. This series of things, and I'll show those to you. In fact, Donald, can I give him, you know, just on the last three letters, because just issues that relate to this.
I'd love to have.
Well, I just have a couple other things. You know, what do you know of the Navigators, and what's your connection with us?
Well, I knew of the Navigators through a man named Dawson Trotman. When I was in undergraduate school, he was a very lively force on the scene, and little booklets and things like that by him. And stories that he would tell in speeches about sailors and all that. And I didn't really know his personal story until Dawes, the book, came out, and then I knew more about him personally. But I always knew about the Navigators in that connection. And then, of course, you can't avoid the Navigators if you're in Christian work. You're always coming up against them.
Yeah.
Or hopefully
with them.
Well, that's what I mean. But you know, the literature and everything, that's just a presence.
And we're hoping you're getting to know us just a little bit in these few years, you know.
Absolutely.
We've tried to draw you in.
Well, I'm so amazed. And I was telling some, I guess, the guys writing in from the... wherever I go in the world, I'm always here. Always people who were converted by Navs or have a past history in the Navs. I remember I was in Slovakia some time back, and at the conference, and a mansion out in the desolate countryside. And here were people from all over Central Europe, and half of them had a past navigators.
Milan and Marina Zed and others, that ought to encourage you. But two other little things, big things, your family, your wife and your children. Tell us a little bit about.
Well, apart from my salvation, my wife Jane is the single greatest blessing I can't imagine. I simply wouldn't have been able to be much of anything without her. And she's from Georgia, Macon, Georgia. And, it's just amazing how God has dwelled in her. We have two children, son John, who is 46, but he won't admit it because he still thinks he's a teenager. And Becky, who is 41, and I don't think she'll admit it either, but they're beautiful kids, and we love them dearly. And we have a little grandchild who's 4 and a half. Larissa is her name, Spanish for laughter. And she is such an incredible joy to us. I can't carry pictures of her with me because it makes me so homesick when I look at them. Can't stay.
Okay. I know what it's like. Just the final thing. You know, what is it that, as you look back on the years, has stimulated your personal walk with Christ as much as anything? What is it that motivates you to keep walking with Christ?
I don't know anything to say except just the beauty of Jesus. But I don't mean that in a sentimental way. It's just an utter amazing person of Jesus. And when I was a young pastor, I was turned to the Gospels to study them and to... And he is just so great. And people often wonder how this fits into philosophy. Well, just like it was meant for it, you know. I mean, he's right at home there. He's still got the best answers to all the questions. And it's just the sense that he is, as Muhammad Ali said of himself, he's the greatest. He's just the greatest. And there isn't anything else going on earth that competes with being a part of what he is now doing on earth. And the short answer is there's nothing remotely close.
Well, isn't that great? We can get to know Dallas, and I wanted to interview him because as we've gotten to know him, to sense his walk with Christ, and you know I wouldn't bring anybody into this council but someone who I felt would minister the person of Jesus and the Word, but also God has blessed him in many ways. So, Dallas, thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
We really look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good.